Chapter 80. Monroe's handwriting was cramped and neat and meticulous. It filled about 50 of the small pages. His method was to record two or three conversations at a time, and then to summarize them before moving on to the next two or three. That way, both his raw materials and his conclusions were preserved side by side, the latter for ease of reference, the former for reconfirming the latter. A circular system, safe, diligent, and conscientious. He was a good cop. Reed Riley's photograph was still in the book, wedged tight into the spine after the last note and before the first blank page. I realized he had been using it as a bookmark. The focus of all 50 pages was Janice May Chapman. It had emerged early on that she and Riley had been dating. Not that Riley had said anything about her, or about anything else, either. He had lawyered up at the start, and confined his answers to name, rank, and number. No big deal for an investigator of Monroe's quality. He had spoken to every man in Bravo Company, and teased out the facts from the blind sides and the unguarded rear. He had taken fragments of passing mentions, and put them all together and woven them into a solid and reliable narrative. Riley's men had talked about him in a way I had heard many times before. He was too young to be a legend, too unproven to be a star, but he had some kind of celebrity charisma, partly because of who his father was, and partly because of his own personality. But he wasn't liked. The conversations, as recorded, were loyal to a fault. But it was institutional loyalty, not personal loyalty. All of it filtered through any soldier's traditional hatred for the military police. No one had a bad thing to say about the guy, but no one had a good thing to say either. By reading between the lines of what was and wasn't said, I saw that Riley was a grandstander and a show pony, and that he was impatient, reckless, careless, and full of entitlement. No big deal in a low-temperature environment like Kosovo, but he would have been accidentally shot in the back or blown up with a faulty grenade on his first day if he had been a generation older in Vietnam. That was for damn sure. Better men than Riley had suffered that fate. Before Chapman, it was clear he had dated Shauna Lindsay. They had been seen together many times. And before Lindsay, he had dated Rosemary McClatchy. They, too, had been seen together many times, in the bars, in the diner, riding around in the blue 57 Chevy. There was a faint, twice-removed reek of testosterone in Monroe's notes, as one young man after another had chortled about the big dog mowing them down in sequence, all the best-looking women in town, just like that. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And according to Bravo Company, that prestigious sequence had begun with Elizabeth Devereaux. She was well known at Kellam because of an early courtesy visit at the start of the mission. Back then, training had been intense, and there had been no leave or downtime, but the big dog had snuck out at night and nailed the prize. That triumph had been revealed one evening during Bravo Company's first tour to Kosovo over drinks around a fire. Again, I could almost hear the voices firsthand, full of chuckling delight at the way the rest of the regular 75th training grunts thought Devereaux was a lesbian, and at the way the boys of Bravo Company secretly knew better, because of their big dog, their alpha male, and his irresistible ways. They didn't like the guy, but they admired him. Personality and charisma. And hormones, too, I guessed. There was nothing else of interest in the notebook. I spent some time looking at Riley's picture again, and then I squared the whole thing away in my own top pocket, and I went back to waiting. The rest of the afternoon was long and fruitless. The hours passed, and no one called, and no one came, and the town stayed quiet. At one point, I heard some faint live firing noise from the east, and I guessed the hoopla at Kellam was going swimmingly. From time to time, I drank a cup of coffee and ate a slice of pie. But mostly, I just rested in a semi-vegetative state, eyes open but half asleep, breathing low, saving energy, like hibernation. Local people came and went in ones and twos, and at 6 o'clock, Jonathan and Hunter Brannan came in for an early dinner to fuel up ahead of their busy evening, which I thought was wise, and two or three others I took to be bar owners did the same thing, and some of what I took to be their cleaners stopped by before heading home. And at 7 o'clock, Main Street went dark outside the window, and at 7:30, the old couple from the hotel came in for their meal, she with her book, he with his paper. Then a minute later, Stan Lowry called on the phone, and the evening began to unravel.